I'm here at the 1015 Theater, a small nonprofit community theater located in downtown Astoria, Oregon, sitting in on a midweek rehearsal for the June 2024 production of a play called Exit Pursued by Bear. I'm here today to learn more about the 1015 and how the community can support their efforts. This program is the first episode of Beach Grassroots, a monthly show highlighting nonprofits of the North Oregon and South Washington coastal region. In the next half hour, we'll hear from some of the volunteers and staff who keep things running over here at the 1015.
Here we go, and curtain speech.
My name is Jolene McGee. I am the director of this production. I am very glad 1015 is here because I think the arts are really important to the community, and I think the 1015 goes beyond what you normally see in a theater, especially in a community theater. I think they do a lot of different types of productions. They do some stuff with like local artists, and I think that's really important to support in the community. It's really easy to feel at home here.
My name is Everett Fitz. I'm grateful that 1015 Theater exists in this community for someone like me who's looking for more acting experience. I'm a transgender male actor, and so far I've felt very welcomed here and emotionally safe and supported. So I'm happy to be here and participating.
My name is Shaylin, and this is my first show here at the 1015. I've been in productions all around Astoria, but this is my first one here. It's a lot more professional than any other theater I've been at, and it's a very welcoming and open environment. I thought, you know, I'd be too young to do a show here, and I was casted in the part that I wanted. While working with all of the people, the director, backstage, the other actors, I've felt very at home with the entire community here.
I'm Deborah. I'm in the current production happening at 1015. Yeah, I'm here because I'm just generally attracted to theater wherever I go. It's always a place that feels super welcoming and like home, and it's just a silly kind of ridiculous pastime as humans that we do to get up on stage and pretend like we're someone else to make people feel the feelings that we're feeling so that they feel more human.
I'm Slab Slabinski. I am doing lights and sound for the current play. I'm normally up in the booth doing tech stuff or backstage or on stage acting. I love this community theater because it is just an amazing place for people to get together, do stuff that you don't see anywhere else. It's a very open, inviting space. It's an awesome theater. Can I say awesome more?
Sure.
I'm going to. Awesome. Yeah, I love it.
Hi, my name is Ryan Hull, and I am on the board of directors of the 1015 Theater, and I have also directed two shows there, D&D, A Night with David and Durang, and The Waverly Gallery. I believe that the 1015 is an amazing opportunity for the city of Astoria, but the community at large to have that communal conduit to represent a lot of people. You know, I think that it's a great place to go and meet up with others, to enjoy some form of entertainment. I think with the 1015, you know, we have different options. It's not just a few shows a season. We have Performathon that's coming up. We have different types of shows like our Simple Salmon, you know, that stems from the community, local artists getting together to write the skits, then to perform them, and directed by a person who's been involved for a very long time, Bill Hamm. So it gives you all of that. It's just a great place to meet. And we're branching out and trying to, you know, provide as much help and support in the community as possible. Pride Month, we've partnered with The Q, and I think have had great results doing that. During our last show, we donated and dedicated a portion of our proceeds to go towards the Q Center of the Month. I think we did raise and generate a good bit of money for the center. It's a really exciting place to be at and an exciting time, and I'm happy and thrilled that I can be a part of it. I have experience with the theater too, being a director. I've directed two shows there so far. The first show I directed there was a labor of love. It was two one-act plays, so I kind of mushed together an interview by David Mamet with Christopher Durang, An Actor's Nightmare. It was exciting because the 1015 gave me the opportunity to flex my creative muscles as a director and be able to do stuff like that. And then fortunately and honoringly enough, the first half of the show, an interview was selected to go and represent the theater at the AACT Awards. And we actually went down and I guess then got in competition mode. You know, you don't think of plays being in a competition. That's not why we do it, but it was fun to go and experience other shows. In a sense, I believe we were the runner-ups to represent this region. We were one show away from taking the show to Washington, D.C. or something like that. So, you know, I was really proud of the theater, of the production. My stage manager was amazing. My actors were tremendous. And it was just an overall amazing experience that the 1015 gave us. We also offer classes. I know one of the classes has been to work on auditions. So if you were on the fence and a little kind of nervous or tenuous about it, try to see if we had a class that could just, you know, get you wet your beak, get you interested, kind of show you some tips and just give you that level of ease and understanding of how to audition. If that's not available, I'd say just go for it. That's one of the whole points of the 1015 is to go and experience this. All walks of life come to the 1015 to audition. We've got people that have auditioned for years. We've got people that it's their first time. I was just at the last audition for Simple Salmon. And I know that of the people that auditioned, I think three or four people were brand new, their very first audition. So it was just a great thing to see that. I think it's a welcome environment, an open environment, a warm environment to come and give it a try. At the end, I talked to a couple of the new people and they seemed to really be excited, had smiles on their faces and were glad they opened the door and took that chance. That's what I'd say. Go do it. Go for it. Danielle Tinker, who's now the executive artistic director, is amazing. She has given us a focus and she's given us a way to steer and course the theater. And this theater is growing and amazing because of her leadership. I don't want that to go unnoticed. She has really put us on the right path.
Hi, my name's Danielle Tinker, and I am the executive artistic director for the 1015 Theater here in downtown Astoria.
Well, thank you for joining me today. So could you tell us, what is the mission or the purpose of the 1015 Theater?
The 1015 Theater serves to not only provide an active community theater, but we also host classes for those interested in learning more about participating in theater. And we also serve as a venue for outside organizations who might not necessarily have access to performance space. Our address is 1015 Commercial Street, and we are in the big, beautiful purple Oddfellows building that's right there on the corner of 10th and Commercial downtown. It began back in 2018. Two individuals who had varying theater backgrounds of their own came together to build out the space. It was previously under Peer Pressure Productions, which is a group that some folks might be familiar with, and that evolved into the 1015 Theater. Of course, all of this was happening leading right into COVID. So under that organization, they had gotten a couple of productions under their belt, and they then opened and closed on March 13th, 2020. Then during that downtime, the people who were running the space decided to move on to other things and actually moved out of the area. And we were fortunate enough that a benefactor actually stepped in and covered the overhead expenses for the space to ensure that it would be there when things were ready to start reopening. And the landlord and that individual met with me in, I guess it would have been June of 21. I had a background running a theater and it was something that was becoming interesting to me again. So they hired me on and we officially reincorporated on July 5th. I just really love the building of something. I love creating. And this was not a role that I initially had thought that I'd be interested in doing again. And I just couldn't stop daydreaming about what that would look like. So that's what led me to ultimately get in touch and start that conversation.
You've been doing this for a few years now. Mm-hmm. What is it that keeps you going back?
Just the wonderful sense of community that we are building. It's been amazing to see not only the growth in the production value itself, but the increase of people coming through the doors. I get so excited at auditions whenever we see new faces, because I really truly feel like that's how this is going to sustain in the long run, is that we keep bringing new people into the fold and helping them grow their talents and progress in their own creative journeys. I mean, there's several examples. One that initially comes to mind is our production of Macbeth last fall. We had such a huge turnout for auditions, which honestly, I thought Shakespeare would be kind of a gamble. It was either going to be a really big hit or a really big miss. We had a huge base of people come from over an hour away that were involved with that production. So they're driving 2 hours a day to just come to rehearsal and be a part of it. And they were so immensely talented. But also the audience response. We had sold out performances nearly every night, which was unheard of at that point. Just really seeing how the community all came together and was all really excited and got behind us in a really big way.
What have been some of the biggest hurdles to success along the way?
Oh, I know every nonprofit says this, but funding. Oh my goodness, that's always a struggle. We're not going to disappear next week or anything like that, but it's really the work that goes into getting that stability in place is definitely a constant challenge. It's hard to approach it too without sounding like a broken record, but knowing that we need to get that word out, because if you don't know, you don't know. And we want our community to understand that there is a lot of need in that regard. We've also had some technical challenges. Shortly after I came on, we had flooding in our basement, which also serves as our scene shop and dressing room space. It was about a 4-month process before the city was able to identify what the issue was and repair it. So we really had to start from scratch to get that space usable again. I'm very proud to say that we had some great support within our volunteer base to get things going again. And it's a much more pleasant space to be in now.
So you talked a little bit about funding. What are the main sources of funding for your organization? Do you have various buckets that you draw from, I assume, like most nonprofits do?
Yeah, it's kind of a three-legged stool in our case. Grants has quickly become the sturdiest leg, thank goodness, but there is still a lot of work that goes into that, and it's never a guarantee. And then combine that with donations. We have some wonderful supporters that we could always use more. And then ticket sales are really about a third to half of our income. So that basically pays for the expense of putting on the show itself, but not a lot of the other hidden expenses of running the space that people might not necessarily think of. Electricity and toilet paper and all those fun, exciting things.
So you mentioned donors. Do you have programs for donors to become sort of like a regular donor? Do you do regular asks? How would someone know how and when to donate to you? And is there a way that they can look out for that? Set something up recurring? What are those options?
We have a few different things. Recurring donors are the biggest need for sure. Even if it's just $5 a month, knowing that steady income is coming in is such a huge relief. And that anybody can do that via our website. We also do an annual fundraiser called Performathon. This year it falls July 13th and 14th. 24 hours of live entertainment. And it's not always what you necessarily assume it's going to be. We get a lot of great, you know, live music, and we're going to tease some shows that are coming up later this season, do little snippets so people get a taste of what they might buy a ticket to. We have a lovely volunteer who puts together an entire quilt in 2 hours. So you get the wild and wacky and some of the expected, and it's a lot of fun. We also have a raffle, and then this year we're adding a silent auction. So I'm hoping that may be attractive to those who don't necessarily want to come and watch 24 hours of entertainment, but want to give in a different way.
What kinds of volunteer opportunities can folks find at the theater?
If you're interested in being a part of a show, we don't just need actors. So if you're not really excited about trying to be on stage, we always need people backstage. A lot of those positions do have a certain type of skill set that's required. Stage managers need to be super organized and comfortable with technology and being in a leadership position. We also need booth operators who can run lights and sound. And then even more so, like designers, people who have a background in lighting design or sound design. All of these are skills that can easily be taught too. So if something's just like, oh, that sounds interesting, but I don't know the first thing about running a light board, well, we can teach you that too. That's part of the beauty of community theater, is educating those who have the interest. front of house is more your speed. We are always in need of house managers, and that's kind of a hospitality situation. You're selling tickets, you're greeting people at the door. There is some cash handling and computer reports that are involved with that, but again, very easily taught. If you have an OLCC license, we always need volunteer bartenders too, which is probably one of the easiest gigs we have to offer. You pour beer and wine for a half an hour before the show. You get to see the show for free and you get to keep your tips.
So if you're providing education for folks who are interested in volunteering, are you also providing workshops outside of that that are a little bit less specific to a show?
We do, and they're usually generated by directors or other more experienced volunteers who are like, I have this specific skill that I would like to share. Some great examples of that leading into our production of Macbeth, actually, this was a great tie-in. The director taught a Shakespeare workshop to help people get more comfortable with the language in preparation for the audition. And he also taught two sets of stage combat because that was a big portion of that show. Other classes have involved improv workshops or writing workshops. We did a series of acting for senior citizens a couple years back. That was really great. I'm hoping to bring that back in the future. So yeah, it's oftentimes somebody will have an idea and then we'll work out a schedule and go from there. We have a couple of larger projects that I'm hoping to accomplish. One would be to convert our lighting system to all LED. The instruments that we have are lovely and I'm so grateful for them, but they are hand-me-downs and they're pretty antiquated at this point. And as they age, it gets more difficult to repair or replace parts. Well, we're behind the curve and getting that conversion into place, which while it will be a chunk of money on the outset, it's going to save us a lot in energy costs. So hopefully we can accomplish that in the next year or so. We've had a lot of great opportunity with the American Association of Community Theater. Last year, we participated in the National One Act Festival, and we came in second at the regional level. I would really love to see us pursue more opportunities like that. It gives us a good way to network with other community theaters outside of our immediate area and learn new skills and grow our company. It starts on the state level. The Oregon Community Theater Association put out a call for any groups who might have a one-act play that they'd be interested in submitting. And we had actually just closed a show that was two one acts that we had combined. So it was kind of a natural fit. So we had that adjudicated. They go through this very extensive training on how to evaluate a production from set to lights, costumes, performance itself, really finally go through it and give you some really good constructive feedback. And we then advanced to the regional competition. And that was Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Alaska. I think Montana's part of our region. Don't quote me on that. I'd have to double check the website. Last year, that competition was held in McMinnville at Gallery Theater. So it was an easy commute for us. And so we were part of five productions that went up that weekend. And it's a very intense but enthralling dance to watch. You get exactly 10 minutes to set up your stage. Your show cannot be more than 60 minutes or you're disqualified. And then you have exactly 10 minutes to tear everything down. Everything involved with your production has to fit in a 10 by 10 square. Like they tape it out. And luckily the show we selected had a standalone door and a folding table and a couple of chairs. So that was boom, 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 easy. And it fell well under an hour. So we were well oiled in that regard. But we got to see two productions from Idaho and a couple of from Washington. Just the great variety of shows that were selected and the talent involved. It was just really cool to be a part of that. There's no audience like a theater audience. Like you want everyone to do their best and everyone's just really rooting hard for each other. And it's a lot of fun. It was Stage Left Theater in Spokane that took the big prize and went to the national competition and they actually won the whole thing. So we felt pretty good about how we did in that regard. And their show, oh my gosh, it blew me away. We've also done some really cool collaborations with other organizations in our area. We did Tiny Beautiful Things and just on a whim, the director reached out to Cheryl Strayed, who is the author of the book it was based on, and asked if she'd be interested in coming out, and she did. much to all of our surprise. So we had this wonderful collaboration with the Writers Guild. A member of the Writers Guild then interviewed Cheryl after a performance. We had this great community discussion about the show and her work in general. So that was a really cool, fun memory. And then also last year we did a stage reading of a original work called Bartow, based on Rick Bartow, who was a Native American artist from Newport. The author of that was from Portland, and he had worked closely with a gallerist who used to represent Bartow's work. That came together in this really cool way where the playwright and the gallerist came out, and we partnered with Astoria Visual Arts, and they provided someone to moderate a similar discussion after one of the performances.
What can you tell me about your history with theater? How long have you been doing this? Have you been doing this since you were a little kid, or did you come to it late? And what do you get out of it?
Well, I came to theater by way of dance. Grew up dancing, had terrible stage fright. My mom, going into high school, said that if I was going to continue dancing, I needed to take a theater class because she was tired of me having horrible vomiting episodes and crying in a corner. So I did. I will say that stage fright never really went away for me, but I really enjoyed it. And then as I grew through high school, circumstances just led me more into theater and away from dance. I went on to college thinking I was going to be a teacher, but by the end of my freshman year, I'd switched my major to theater. I just kept doing it for fun. I was really involved with the local community theaters where I was living at the time. It's like, this is my fun hobby. It's not ever going to pay the bills, even though I have a degree. That's okay. I know I'm not alone in that. Very long story short, did a production with an individual who was interested in starting his own theater. And at that point, I had not been on a board per se, but I had been on a lot of committees and I had seen how other community theaters worked. So he was picking my brain for ideas. And that evolved into what is now known as Twilight Theater Company, that is located in the Kenton neighborhood of Portland. So I co-founded that with him and one other individual. They left the organization a couple years in, and then it was myself and their current artistic director that were running it together until I relocated to here almost 6 years ago. Yeah.
Could you describe the space maybe to someone who hasn't been before, or maybe someone who, I don't know who these people are, but if they've never been in a community theater, what is that like and what's it like in this space?
I love our space so much. And we get compliments on it all the time, and I cannot take credit for that whatsoever. It was the immense talents of those who got it going that made it into the beautiful spot it is now. But we're in a storefront. It used to be an old antique store, and I'm sure 1,000 other things before that. So it's really not what I think the average person would think of when they think of a theater. Some refer to it as a black box, which isn't 100% accurate because black boxes tend to be more module, but I would say a studio theater is probably the most accurate description. So we walk in, you're greeted in this lobby that is paneled in this gorgeous wood that was salvaged from an old home that was torn down here in town. We have these sliding barn doors that lead into the auditorium itself. When I came on, the seating that we had was all like conference chair style. However, when we reopened past COVID, we had stored a lot of those seats in the basement because we were trying to reduce capacity. Then they got destroyed in the flooding. So we had another donor who had these gorgeous seats that came from Coaster Theater. They've had several lives in their 100-year-ish age. So we were able to install those a couple summers ago. So you have these great vintage cushy seats that you get to enjoy. They're in great shape. They've clearly were refurbished and well taken care of over the years. The rest of the space is black. We've got these beautiful flame sconces in the auditorium, which is where our logo was inspired from. And then the stage itself is very unique. It was built, again, this was an old storefront, so it was built into the space, but there is a staircase on the left-hand side as you're looking at it. That is permanent. We just have to work with it, which actually makes for some really cool set designs. There's no way for us to remove the staircase. Sometimes we will cover it in all black and it will just kind of disappear into the background. But it's actually been a really fun challenge for our set designers. Some of them are just really, really into the staircase and finding a way to make it work, or the directors are really into looking for scripts that will utilize a staircase. It's kind of a fun feature.
I would never have guessed those were 100-year-old.
Yeah, chairs. Yeah, they're clearly, they were refurbished. They yeah. were originally in the original Lincoln Hall in Portland, which was Lincoln High School at the time, but now it's part of Portland State University. And then they went to Coaster, and now they're here.
Okay, so is there anything else that you would like people to know about the theater, how they can support you?
I really want us to be producing things that might be a little outside of the box in terms of what people expect from community theater. I really enjoy programming that makes you think. That might include classics like Shakespeare or Tennessee Williams, but a lot of the time that includes newer works that are a little bit more off the beaten path and a little bit quirkier. I want people to come away from a show and really think about their experience and what that show meant or how it might apply to their day-to-day lives. I think people often underestimate community theater audiences and volunteers for that matter. So I really want to push that boundary in our community here.
Can you think of some examples of themes that you're thinking of? And also, do you look to the community for suggestions for plays or people bringing their own material?
That's a good thing to cover, actually. So every year I put out a call for directing proposals. And that's actually, that process is beginning for next season. So I put out the call usually June or July. And I set a theme for the season. So this current season was Growing Pains, which turned out to be a self-fulfilling prophecy in some ways that I was not anticipating. But it's all good. Growth is good. So all the shows that were submitted were meant to somehow connect to that theme. So maybe it's very literal, somebody's physically growing, or maybe they're going through a challenge in their life that they're overcoming or taking big or little steps personally. So it all kind of comes back to that idea of growing pains. I don't want to reveal what next year's theme is just yet. That will come out when we announce our season, but it's similar in nature, just that overarching theme that could be interpreted a whole lot of different ways. So then those directors submit those shows to me. I read them through. I meet with the directors. Especially if they're new to us, if it's not somebody we've worked with before, I want to make sure, one, that they understand the uniqueness of our space, especially if it's a particularly challenging show in regards to space or set needs. And I select the season from there. And then we do a big party, big reveal party in the fall where I announce what we're going to be doing and introduce the directors and all of that good stuff.
Roughly how many shows do you do in a season?
This year we shifted to a 6-show model. Each show runs for 3 weekends, and that seems to be hitting a really good groove for us. Previously, we had done 4 main stage shows and then 4 staged readings. I still would like to sneak in a staged reading here or there, but it was a little bit more challenging. We weren't able to get as many performances in. The feedback I got was really that people would rather have more chances to see fewer things.
How can people find out more about you?
Our website is the1015theater.com, and that's all spelled out T-E-N-F-I blah 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 theater with an E-R. And we're also on Facebook and Instagram.
This has been an episode of Beach Grassroots, a monthly program highlighting nonprofits of the North Oregon and South Washington coastal region. Beach Grassroots is produced at the studios of KMUN in Astoria, Oregon, by me, Emma Geddes. Thank you to the folks at the 1015 Theater for making this episode possible, and to the Astoria Co-op for collaboration efforts. Find out more about this program at kmun.org, and find this and future episodes wherever you find podcasts.